Chase's comment is indicative of an important aspect of the progressive mindset. Anybody who's ever met a student activist, a muckraking journalist, or a reformist politician will notice the important role that boredom and impatience play in the impulse to remake the world. One can easily see how boredom, sheer unrelenting ennui with the status quo, served as the oxygen for the fire of progressivism, because tedium is the tinder for the flames of mischievousness. In much the same way that Romanticism laid many of the intellectual predicates for Nazism, the impatience and disaffection of progressives during the 1920s drove them to see the world as clay to be sculpted by human will. Sickened by what they saw as the spiritual languor of the age, members of the avant-garde convinced themselves that the status quo could be easily ripped down like an aging curtain and just as easily replaced with a vibrant new tapestry. This conviction often slid of its own logic into anarchism and radicalism, related worldviews which assumed that anything would be better than what we have now. A deep aversion to boredom and a consequent indiscriminate love for novelty among the intellectual classes translated into a routinized iconoclasm and a thoroughgoing contempt for democracy, traditional morality, the masses, and the bourgeoisie in a love for action, action, action that still plagues the left today. How much of the practiced radicalism of the contemporary left is driven by the childish pranksterism they call being subversive? Many of George Bernard Shaw's bon mots seem like shots in the dark against the monster of boredom, which could only be conquered by Nietzschean Superman. At one time or another, Shaw idolized Stalin, Hitler, and Mussolini as the world's great progressive leaders because they did things, unlike the leaders of those putrefying corpses called parliamentary democracies. In like terms, Gertrude Stein praised Huey Long by declaring that he was not boring. Or consider H.G. Wells. More than any other figure, his literary escapism and faith in science as the salvation of man were seen as the preeminent antidotes to the disease of Western malaise. In the summer of 1932, Wells delivered a major speech at Oxford University to Britain's Young Liberals organization, in which he called for a phoenix rebirth of liberalism under the banner of liberal fascism. Fabian socialism had failed, he explained, because it hadn't grasped the need for a truly revolutionary effort aimed at the total transformation of society. His fellow socialists understood the need for socialism, but they were just too nice about it. Their advocacy of piecemeal gas, water, and school board socialization was simply too boring. Conventional democratic governments, meanwhile, were decadent, feeble, and dull. If the liberals in the 1930s were going to succeed where the Fabians had failed, abolishing private property, achieving a fully planned economy, violently crushing the forces of reaction, they'd have to learn that lesson.